You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on the show, I'm talking with Dawn Dedeau. Dawn, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you for inviting me.
So, Dawn, tell us a little bit about where are you now exactly, and what's your latest project? What are you working on?
Well, the now where am I story is delicious because I'm with a bunch of good friends who I haven't seen in a month or so, and we just left Parasol Bar. I'm with Paul and Sarah Costello and Andy Deal, and we just had a wonderful New Orleans meal and late afternoon cocktails to prepare me for my talk.
Very good. And what are you involved in now in terms of your own work?
Well, in the last 3 or 4 years, probably going on 4 years, I've been working on a series called the Mothership Series, and it takes flight from this interview I heard with Stephen Hawking that he was talking about how much time we had left on Earth. And in the interview, he stated, well, we have 100 years left, not to save Earth, but to figure out how to leave. So as an artist who's been dealing with ecological issues, mostly prompted, I would admit, by Katrina, Hurricane Katrina and the BP oil spill, this was a provocative a concept to wrap my head around. So I've been doing a series of work the last few years that takes this on as a starting point, that maybe we blew it. How do we get out? How do we survive?
So 100 years, I've never heard that exact phrase from him before. He's saying possibly they have 100 years to figure out how to leave the planet?
Yes, and he said that 12 years ago, so we have even less time. But and not that he's correct, but there are scientists and visionaries who agree with him. But that the resources, Mothership One, for instance, which I produced about 4 years ago, the full title is Mothership One, Postulations of Myth and Math. And in that exhibition, I kind of ran the numbers predicted by leading scientists about how much land we have left to farm on, what the population will be, let's say, in 2045, when we should exceed 9 billion people. So do we have enough land to feed 9 billion? More importantly, do we have enough water to drink? Water's the next precious commodity. Of course, it's going to be more valuable than oil, and hopefully we will have weaned ourselves off of fossil fuel. But nonetheless, we have to concern ourselves with basic necessities. I think climate change is accelerating this, and it's factored into the mathematical equations. So I ran those kind of numbers against myths, ancient myths from disparate, widespread cultures, as different as Korean, Persian, Native American, even Eastern Romanian, myths predicting the end of time. And in those myths, you find a scenario not so dissimilar from the map.
That's interesting. And in the installation you did in 2013 about the Mothership series, is I guess that was the kind of beginning of that. You used a whole variety of mediums, and I wanted to talk a little bit about that. But is that also what you're doing now? You're working in a variety of mediums?
Yes, I think first and foremost, I'm a conceptual artist, and I put the idea ahead of a selection of a specific media, and I want to pick a media that can best serve and deliver the idea. So that makes me weak in some areas as a craftsperson with certain selections, but I prefer to know my strengths and weaknesses and then do collaborations with people who can bring to the table. For instance, if I'm working with slabs of poured polished acrylic, or if I'm printing on stainless steel, or if I'm doing any number of things, if someone can do it better, I want to work with them, and we serve the idea. So in Mothership 1, that was true. Mothership 2, which opened, I guess, in 2014 at the Acadiana Center for the Arts, that had a bit more of a specific driving media because I had just done an artist residency program with the Rauschenberg Foundation in Captiva, Florida, and I had had the great privilege of working with Bob's presses and some of his surviving assistants. And so there I did Mothership 2, Dreaming of a Future Past. And here I put more of a human face into the equation. Instead of math, I put mankind and how are we surviving in the midst of all of these bad statistics. And so largely we're in protective spacesuits, wearing suits here on Earth because our air quality is poor, or wearing suits to survive in outer space in zero gravity and et cetera, et cetera. So I imagine, taking liberty as an artist can, I imagine that we could have suits that were no longer sterile, silver or white, but that they bore the patterns of flora and fauna of nature. Because imagine that we do have to leave. We're forever, I guess, a child of Earth and indebted to what Earth was. And that's a curvilinear organic line rather than straight line. So I have lots of depiction of these spacesuits, very ornate, somewhat like medieval Japanese samurai outfits. If you look back, actually, to the Middle Ages, you can see some similarities. But there I put mankind more center into the exhibition. And then that was followed by Mothership 3, The Station. And here this differed from 1 and 2 because I went more predominantly with sculpture. And I had been using this ring.
This is Mothership 3. Mothership 3 you're talking about, right?
Yes, yes. Mothership 2 was at the Acadiana Center for the Arts in 2014. And then later in the fall, the late fall winter of 14 into 15, I did Mothership 3, The Station. And here I found this amazing outdoor site. It had been a former warehouse building, but the roof had collapsed and the rafters still there, and big mature trees now growing through the site, but brick walls containing it on four sides. And there I was fortunate to work with a truss company that gave me 50-foot and 30-foot truss rings. And why this is important is I had been using a similar truss ring in my two-dimensional works because this ring was the first building component used to build the Zeppelin series, which are still to date the largest airborne ships ever built. Mm. And why big ships? Well, because, again, we're going to have over 9 billion people by 2045, and this brings up class issues, does it not? How many people can we fit on these buses? Who gets a seat on board? So it's also tying into to myth. As an artist, again, I can build my own mythology. So there's The Hobbit and the Wagner's Ring. So I have my own ring, and the ring I chose is this very, very large ring that symbolizes our marriage with technology, and it comes from the first structure used to build the Zeppelins. Sorry, that was a long sentence, but here
fine.
I am now.
I like this.
Okay, so I'm in Mothership 3. These rings had appeared in very large two-dimensional landscape pieces I had done, very apocalyptic landscapes in 1 and 2. And this ring kind of drops down to Earth in the midst of the fire, and it's what takes us off, you know. But it was great to have these real trusses, three-dimensional truss rings, and I wove them throughout this building, and forgetting any kind of narrative function or purpose. It was quite a beautiful integration. And there were, in addition to these truss rings, discarded suitcases, because I was imagining this might have been one of the many places where mankind could have gone to depart. So they were in corners of this abandoned warehouse, discarded suitcases. There was also a wall section of installation called Souvenirs of Earth. because if we're trying to, and this is a question I pose to your art listeners, if we're leaving, do we take our cultural, what we deem to be important cultural artifacts, or do we throw away those artifacts and make room for people? So this is also going to be a tough decision, and I think with the incident with ISIS bombing Palmyra, you know, the reaction that got and the disdain the reaction got by many people saying, oh, well, we care more about culture than the lives of people. So these questions will be asked in the future. So anyway, there was Souvenirs of Earth instead of the real Mona Lisa, a tiny postcard. Instead of the Pieta, a tiny little souvenir statue of that or the Moses. Maybe bronze baby shoes, a piece of hair, seeds, dirt. What are we going to grow our food in? There's only so much hydroponic, right? So that was Mothership 3. And now I'm working on Mothership 4, which will be shown in part at Mass MoCA in May of 2017. And this will be somewhat of a continuation and will also help me realize a bit of the utopian quest that also interests me. And the most recent utopian quest...
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that, the utopian quest, because
okay.
To me also this is, you know, as you were saying all of this and I've been looking at the project previously, it is a post-apocalyptic project perhaps, or after the end of the earth, and as opposed to it being about how we're going to save the planet, as so many people are discussing or make different decisions, this notion of you know, kind of interstellar travel or somewhere else is not only a different, a whole different way of thinking geographically, but it's also kind of an optimistic take. Utopian is what I was going to say. So, I mean, and I guess, is that the case? Is that what you're about to talk about now, this utopian notion?
Well, I want to talk, I think utopian notion is very, very important, but I don't want to go to it naively because the challenges of survival are, you know, it's pretty formidable. So I have hope. I still hold on to some hope, but I don't think it's going to be easy. I will say that. But on to the utopia, which is part of hope. The last example I think we have of this, I would turn us to the civil rights movement and to Sun Ra, Space is the Place, to George Clinton and his mothership. Why were these African Americans who were coming up and in part of the civil rights movement, why turn to utopia? Well, it's because then they didn't imagine that there would be, you know, a life of fairness and equality here on Earth. And so there was, especially you turn to some of Sun Ra's films, it's very interesting that came into the culture of the civil rights movement. So I turn to that as the most recent example of a utopian quest as part of American culture at large. And I'll be addressing that in the Mass MoCA show, and with great fortune, this wonderful curator, Denise Moronish of Mass MoCA, has put me together with the talented artist and great musician Lonnie Holly, who I think is the heir apparent. I think he follows in the trajectory of a Sun Ra and of George Clinton. So I will be working with him. We each have our own section in Mass MoCA to do our works, but they are specifically asking us to also work on a collaboration. And in this regard, Lonnie and I will take on this utopian quest together. So I'm very excited about that.
That is exciting. And Mass MoCA, of course, is an extraordinary space. Can you talk about how much space it'll be, or
well, we can't be greedy, you know. As I say, space is the place, and of course, I'd love all of Building 6, which is what they're getting ready to open. Building 6. And Lonnie and I will be part of the exhibitions on the second floor, but there'll be semi-permanent installations by James Turrell and Louise Bourgeois. Laurie Anderson's going to have a major kind of sound studio and a few other artists there. So I won't have the whole building, but I'll have good neighbors, let me put it that way. I think that both Lonnie and myself, we have Our collaboration is somewhat on fire right now. It's just great. And I think we will...
Maybe speak to that a little bit before we go. How you collaborate with your musician, because that is very exciting. This is a large-scale installation you're doing. And, yeah, how do you approach that collaboration, and why is it on fire?
Well, Lonnie is also a very genius sculptor, I think. He can pick found objects. He's very much out of the kind of a Rauschenberg trajectory. And you can put him in a room and he can just totally do a reassemblage of what's there. He's just got innate, great sensibility. So he will be doing art as well, three-dimensional pieces. But then he is also a musician. He's been working with really top shelf, four or five top shelf musicians who also work with Brian Eno and Daniel Lanois and on and on. So he's got a great crew with him. And I will be working with them somewhat as a scenic interpreter. And I have been, someone has even given me a few survival, they call them survival craft. They look like early submarines or they look like early sci-fi spaceships. So I have now a collection of these, and I hope to do some type of virtual projection of Lonnie Holly, kind of this Captain Universe, with keyboards instead of instruments, let's say dial instruments. But so the collaboration will be both kind of responsive to one another's visual vocabulary, but also this body of work I've been doing and the music that he's been doing that kind of falls in alignment. The stars are in alignment here. So and we'll be going back to Captiva, Florida, where we both have spent time independently at the Rauschenberg Foundation residency program. So we'll be going back for a good chunk in December to finalize our musical collaboration.
That's so exciting. Congratulations on that, and look forward to seeing the show at Mass Mocha. Dawn, I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure discussing the mothership and all your work, and especially the upcoming show at Mocha.
Thank you so much. I'm grateful to you for your interest.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.